might see a number that high in a sprawling narcotics conspiracy that stretches from coast to coast and beyond. That's a pretty high number in a case like this. It really reflects, I think, how deeply the government has been diving into this investigation to try to make these cases.
It was just literally a bunch of working class guys who on the weekend got together and, you know, exercised their rights and trained with firearms. So the FBI says, hey, we'll just pay for everything.
Who arranged the meeting? The FBI's paid provocateur. Robeson was getting paid to set this stuff up.
Christopher Wray should also have to answer for the number of informants the FBI planted in the Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping scandal and why he promoted Stephen D'Antuono from Michigan to the Washington field office ahead of January 6th. But as we now know, neither Wray nor D'Antuono have had to answer questions related to either scandal. Now, that was a clip from the trailer Kidnap and Kill, an FBI terror plot, the documentary. And there continues to be so many parallels between January 6th and the Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping hoax, down to the very treatment of defendants. The Whitmer kidnapping hoax defendant Barry Croft is being moved to a communications management unit, according to news. For those of you who are not familiar with CMUs, that means Croft will be banned from physical contact with his family when they visit or any other visitors. Phone calls are limited, and according to the Center for Constitutional Rights, CMUs are designed to isolate and segregate prisoners in the federal prison system from the rest of the BOP population. CMUs were brought about as part of the counterterrorism response to 9/11. Now let's welcome in investigative journalist Christina Urso, who was the woman behind that powerful documentary telling the real story of the Whitmer kidnapping hoax. Welcome, Christina. It's good to see you. I just recently came across your documentary, and I think everyone should go watch it. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
It's the real story behind this kidnapping scandal has yet to really receive much mainstream coverage. And when you looked at the court documents, particularly in that first case and that showed so much FBI involvement, you see the parallels, like I said, with January 6th. But I want to talk about the treatment, particularly of this Mr. Croft, who yes. is being sent to a CMU where he will be treated like a foreign terrorist. I mean, that's what these were originally intended for, correct? What is the justification being given for moving Mr. Croft?
So there isn't any justification being given. He has had no disciplinary issues in there. I believe what they're doing is something called diesel therapy. So they've been moving these guys around, keeping them moving. So it's difficult to be in contact with your family members, the outside world. As you said, there are a lot of parallels between the kidnapping plot case and January 6th. Mr. D'Antuono is one of the individuals who was in charge of the Whitmer investigation, or he was in charge of the Detroit field office when storming of the state capitol occurred during anti-lockdown protests in 2020. He oversaw that. He told them to stand down and let people in. So he should have to answer questions about that and how it relates to January 6th. But there were 12 informants he used in this case that we know of, possibly more. The FBI, in my opinion, used this case to try to influence the 2020 election. These guys were arrested in October of 2020. It was a month before the election. And I think people forget about that when we talk about election interference. Now, Mr. Croft was participating in my documentary. I was interviewing him, speaking to him. And he'd been at Newaygo County Jail for 2 years. He was able to have video visits with me, with his family members, his daughters. He has three little girls. And at his sentencing hearing, they sentenced him to 20 years in prison. And they came up with this new thing. Oh, he's not a ringleader. They said he's a spiritual leader of the group. They referenced his interviews with me for my documentary. And I got a statement from him on video for the Weaponization Committee. Immediately after that, he was sent to Terre Haute Supermax, and Adam Fox, the other defendant, was sent to Florence Supermax in Colorado. And both of them, the last I had heard from them, they were going to go to ADX, which is sort of like the Lomax area of the Supermax prison. And now, for whatever reason, they're not saying why, they're going to be moving Barry to the CMU. And as you heard, it's going to be very hard for him to meet with his family members and loved ones. And there's really no reason for this other than to punish these guys.
Let me ask you, I assume there's an appeals process going on as well, correct? Wouldn't this make it difficult to have conversations with his legal representation?
Yes, his appeal's going on right now. He and Adam are both appealing their convictions to the Sixth Circuit, and they're both trying to be in contact with their lawyers, and from what I've heard from their family members, the letters that I have gotten from them, it's almost impossible for them to speak with their lawyers right now.
Christina, do you think that keeping them shut up also has to do with keeping the truth about the informants, paid informants, CHSs, all of those that were participating with the FBI under wraps? It's almost like they're moving these guys away and you know, throwing them in and locking the door and keeping them quiet so as not to reveal the FBI's misconduct.
Yes, I think that's correct. And if you remember, this case is still going on. So there were 13 men originally arrested. They broke this up into three different cases. There were six men charged federally, and I think that's the one that everybody's most familiar with. But there are two separate state cases going on where men were charged with providing material support. So it is still ongoing. This story isn't over, and they want to get those convictions. We have a trial with a couple men coming up this August in this state case in Antrim County, Michigan. The Michigan Attorney General continues to talk about it. It's obvious it's very political for them. And they need to get these convictions. So I think that having these guys participating in the documentary, and they were saying exactly where to look for everything, where all of the evidence is in the discovery, like it's all in there. The issue was is that they just weren't able to present it to the jury. So the judge had ruled against them. They weren't allowed to get out of court statements in. So a lot of the things that were picked up on these undercover recording devices by the informants, of informants suggesting violence, informants pushing, just the sheer amount of contact between the informants and the defendants, they didn't want them to see that. And these guys were explaining that, you know, they were in some cases completely set up. It's not just entrapment. We're talking about framing. So the FBI luring people to a place under false pretenses and then using that against them. I think that Barry in particular had been going through all of the legal documents and basically showing me exactly where everything was wrong. And I think that they didn't like that and they wanted to shut him up. And I personally have had my house raided two times since I've started working on the documentary.
Wow. You know, I would think that this is ripe for investigation by the weaponization subcommittee and that people like Stephen Dantuono should be brought before Congress for a public hearing and all of this information put out there and analyzed, and someone like you should testify that has had their home raided because they're just, you know, trying to get to the truth, being a journalist. Has there been any contact with Congress regarding this?
Not that I am aware of. And I did just attend the weaponization hearing where the FBI whistleblowers testified recently. That was fantastic. I would love to see the weaponization committee look into this case in particular, because I cannot really think of anything that has happened in recent years that is very well documented that shows the weaponization of the federal government against the American people in this case. You have a group of guys that were introduced to each other by the FBI, and this was kind of, you know, kept out of the trial. They were able to keep these informants off the stand, so they were able to kind of conceal just the exact amount of influence these informants had in orchestrating the entire thing. And I think that that's the most egregious part. There were some legal issues as well. So at the first trial, there were two guys that were kind of pressured into taking plea deals. And then the other four went to trial. They fought it. Two men were acquitted. They were found not guilty by a jury. And I think that people forget about that. And then the other two, Adam and Barry, at the first trial, there was a mistrial on them, and the government decided to retry Adam and Barry. And at that retrial is where we had things like the judge imposing arbitrary time limits just on the defense lawyers, but not on the prosecutors. So for the two guys that took plea deals, the prosecutors can spend 2 hours talking to them, but the defense team was limited to 25 minutes, which is just crazy. And the judge cited some like white collar case from, you know, that had like 100 different parties involved, and they were trying to limit their testimony so that that trial didn't go on for like 3 months. This trial was taking 2 weeks, so it was very bizarre for that to be imposed. There was an issue of juror misconduct where one of the jurors had apparently told coworkers when he first received the jury summons that he hoped to get on their jury so he could quote unquote hang these guys. Yeah. Now that was three other people that worked with this man testified that he said that, and that juror was not removed. There's not even supposed to be the appearance of impropriety. You know, that judge should have brought in an alternate juror. So these are the issues that will be litigated or adjudicated on appeal, hopefully soon.
Well, I still think this needs to be brought before Congress. We'll reach out and ask if it's on their radar. And we appreciate you, Christina, for coming on and the work that you do. And you can go watch the film yourself. I suggest you do at knkfilm.com. knkfilm.com. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.